What's up, everyone? What's up, Steven? What's going on?
Hey, what's up?
What's
Welcome
going
to
on?
another episode from space
Yeah.
and from the United Dressing Room.
Yeah. It's like completely two different things.
If only space communication from the Earth was so easy, so seamless.
Yeah, I know, right? NASA should be taking down some notes about how we are doing
Yes.
this right now.
Yes, NASA, there is no progress that you guys are doing. Look at our podcasts.
Yeah.
From the time we've commenced, we've amassed 41 subscribers.
Yeah, exactly.
That is what you call progress.
Yeah. And we're doing it in one person is doing in space and another person is doing in dressing room of one of the biggest club in the world. So
yeah,
there's that
you might want to watch us.
Yeah.
Watch out for us.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, Elon Musk, we are coming for you next. Yeah. So, okay. Anyways, let's move on with the sporting news. And that is, Stephen, I think you have some cricket news before we move on to football.
Yeah. So, like everyone knows, Mumbai won the IPL, which is, I mean, at this point, though, it's not even a surprise that Mumbai won because Mumbai was pretty. Did you see the finals? Did you at least watch one match during the entire IPL? Did you at least catch RCB's game?
I think I saw them get knocked out in the tournament.
Shame
yeah.
on you. I might do this podcast alone. I might want to do this podcast alone because Dhanush puts no efforts.
It doesn't matter.
Dhanush puts absolutely no efforts into cricket.
It does. See, I would actually watch like some of the RCB games like in the previous IPL because there was the crowd, there was that intensity, that charisma into each games coming into it. There was that excitement. But now there are no crowds. There is no, like the hype behind the IPL, it just doesn't exist in this year. I don't know why. I think I mainly think that it's because of the fans and the way that people talk about it. And it's only
because you don't watch cricket at all. That's the only
But
reason.
I don't feel it. Like even
because,
in my house, dude.
Because
like,
contrary to your opinion, I think this year was the year where, IPL attracted a lot more newer audiences.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them are working out of home. Out of their home spaces.
Exactly, that's
and,
what I'm saying.
And a lot of them, yeah. That's good, right? Like, obviously, there is that, added advantage for the players that, there is no euphoria around the stadium, which usually happens when in the presence of crowd and all of that stuff. That is not there. And probably one reason why that is sort of enhancing the performance of athletes across any sport, not just football or cricket, So, this was a good time for a lot more people to understand what cricket is in general for people who don't know, who absolutely have no idea about what cricket is or what IPL is, but have, been sort of been around in that atmosphere, which is part of the IPL hype culture, right? So when the IPL season is on, that hype is always around across the streets. The word is always there on the internet. Everyone talks about it. Like you are, directly or indirectly part of that hype culture. So it was a good chance for people who don't know about it, at least just to catch a couple of matches and see what the hype is all about. IPL is so interesting and entertaining, man. Only for the, truly for the entertainment it provides for that 4 hours. It's so entertaining because during the entire course of that 4 hours, you see high octane action, edge of the seat, thrilling matches. And that's probably one reason. It's a very shorter format also, right? Like, and you get to see a countless number of sixes. You get to see countless number of sixes. A lot of the matches that goes down to the wire, to the last ball. So that's one reason why people love it so much. Anyway, so getting back to the final. So it was quite, the odds was completely in favor of Mumbai. It was, the bookmakers would have had a field day because I'm sure all of them had put their bets on Mumbai. If you're a cricket fan, you would have definitely written off Delhi because Delhi did play well, but Delhi in this IPL, I think they lost all their games to Bombay in the league stages. And they played the quarterfinal. I mean, they played the semifinals, wherein so IPL has this weird system. I hope you know. So 4 teams qualify for the playoffs. The first playoff match, whoever wins that game goes directly to the finals.
Yeah, that I know.
And the person who loses that game plays a second qualifier or eliminator or whatever we call it.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's where SRH lost. SRH won against RCB in the second playoffs. Mm-hmm. RCB got knocked out of the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas SRH had to play Delhi again make it to the final.
Yeah.
Okay, so I felt that was hardly undone for them because SRH was, in my opinion, was a better team than Delhi. But Delhi did play well throughout the entire tournament.
But that's a pretty system to have in, right? Like, when you talk about knockouts, that's a pretty weird system to have it in because I don't know any other sports.
I don't understand the logic.
Yeah.
I don't understand the logic of having a qualifier and an eliminator within the semifinals. Doesn't make any sense to me at all. Anyway, so getting back to that, Delhi were a pretty good team throughout the IPL because they were there in the top two. Across the group stages, league stage matches, they were always there in the top two positions of the tables. And I think it was a deserved final, but it was very, very clear that Mumbai is going to take the trophy because they are just too strong.
Okay.
They have an insane team. Insane is not even the word because they have the best bowler in the world.
Is that because of the money?
Maybe it could be, but Mumbai has been pretty smart with their business decisions, right?
Okay.
They have managed to retain the right players over the course of the years, you know, and even the domestic choices, even the players, uncapped players who they have seem to always click somehow. I don't know how. They just managed to identify the right talent, and they have a fantastic captain in Rohit Sharma, right? Rohit Sharma is a superb and an astute captain. He relies a lot on data. Unlike a lot of other captains, that man is so data-centric and he makes a lot of decisions revolving around data and he's very smart. He is a very, very astute captain, so almost on the level of MSD. Kohli is known for his aggression and the spirit he brings along with his captaincy, but not for the level of tactics and understanding of the game. That credit goes to Rohit Sharma and that's one reason why Mumbai has done so well under his leadership. This game was pretty one-sided from the word go because I think Delhi started. Delhi won the toss and they opted to bat, and they lost. I think 3 wickets under 6 overs or something within 6 overs. And their captain Shreyas Iyer, who's again a very good captain, and one of the future batting prospects of India. So he managed to get a good score for the Delhi team, and only him and Rishabh Pant played well. All the others were pretty much, I don't know, they got out for a very cheap scores. But Delhi did manage to post a total of around 155 or something, which I think Mumbai chased it down very easily. So Rohit Sharma, again, he was the standout batsman as he scored almost 70 runs. I think he scored somewhere around 68 or something.
Okay.
And yeah, they easily won the game. They won the game within 17 overs or 18 overs or something.
So does that mean it wasn't as exciting as it would be like any other?
No. It was a very boring game. It was a very, very boring. I was expecting a very high octane thrilling game.
Yeah.
But this was a very boring. Turned out to be a sour one. Because it was from the first ball of the first innings, it was clear Mumbai was going to win. Mumbai got the first wicket in the first ball of the innings. When Delhi opened the batting, when they played the first ball, that was a wicket. Yeah, so they were pretty good. They were pretty good throughout the tournament. They have world-class players. Some of the players, like, Jasprit Bumrah, right?
Bumrah.
So Bumrah, my God, that guy, dude, he is not even human the way he bowls. He is easily the best bowler in the world at the moment. And it's so good to know that he's an Indian. Right? Some of his balls are just unplayable, man. Unplayable. Okay. You cannot even play. He consistently balls at a speed of 145 to 150 kilometer per hour. And the variations he has and the intellect he has, he is just too good. Good of a bowler. He is very difficult to play. So,
like an all-round package.
Because like a proper bowler he is. India is always... India, like if you followed cricket from a very long time, India has had this history of having very few fast bowlers who are damn good.
We had a lot of good spinners, right? Not any good...
Yeah, spinners though we've always had.
Not a lot of good
pace bowlers. Quality pace bowlers we've had in the past, but not on the levels of the Australian bowlers or the South African bowlers. Right? Bumrah is that premium quality. Bumrah is better than some of the best Australian bowlers we have today in the world. So it's a matter of immense pride for us, right? And because every ball of his, like, you know, when he bowls 6 deliveries in one over, each of his ball, looks like a wicket taking ball. That's okay. How good he is.
How good he is.
And Rohit Sharma uses him perfectly, mm-hmm. you know, throughout those 20 overs. He uses him correctly. That's one reason also, again, which you contributed to Bumrah's success and Mumbai Indians' success. So, Mumbai, all around, they are a very good team. They have a brilliant wicketkeeper. They have a good wicketkeeper. They have brilliant openers. They have good, very good batsmen. Mm-hmm. They're very good bowlers. Everything they have, superb.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the crucial factor for Mumbai success is Bumrah. Definitely Bumrah.
Okay. He's kind of like the Malinga that Mumbai Indians had when
oh, dude, he is then. Miles ahead of Malinga. He is... I mean, Bumrah is as important to Mumbai as Messi is for Barca.
Oh my God.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, it's like that. And it was clearly shown his impact. Like, so I think... So Mumbai, when they were playing the league games, they had already qualified for the semis and they had one more match, which was just for the sake of it, they could have played. Okay. Yeah. Even if they had lost the match, they were already in the semis, so it wouldn't have mattered.
Uh-huh.
So they decided to rest Bumrah in that game.
Okay.
So that they could prep him up for the semis. Bumrah didn't play that game and Mumbai lost that game. Only that game he didn't play, they lost that game.
Okay.
They lost it pretty badly also.
Uh-huh.
So that goes on to tell the impact Bumrah has, right?
Oh, okay. Oh, nice. Yeah. So he's like one of the most crucial player in the team.
For any team. Mm-hmm. Any team which has Bumrah, that team is exponentially much better, significantly, you know, much better than their opponents.
Yeah. I think
so RCB... For India, it's a blessing we have him.
Nice. So all in all, do you think this IPL season was maybe as good or even better than the last season compared to like the... You being a fan.
I've experienced much better seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been a fan of IPL. I find it very entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
And this IPL also, I think I watched all the matches.
Mm-hmm.
All the I think I've binged on almost all the games that happened every day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was okay, but I wouldn't say it was as good as maybe the last season,
mm-hmm.
because this season also had lots and lots of boring games.
Yeah.
I don't know what the reason is, but maybe it's that advantage that players have, that there is no audience at all. Because in cricket, at least, though, I mean, it definitely matters if audience plays a factor. The audience are there in the stadium.
Yeah.
Because when you're in your home ground, the entire stadium is rooting for you and there is pressure on the away team, right? So this time, none of that sort happened. If you're a strong team, you're pretty much expected to win the game, and that's what pretty much happened in most of the games.
And also
there were very few games.
And also with cricket, I feel like the reason that it dampers the IPL because there are no fans is because even though it's a T20 cricket, you know, it's still a 4 hour, 5 hour game. Where, you know, there are a lot of, you know, of course, sixes where there are a lot of high action moments there. But at the same time, it slows down. It again starts back up again, slows down, starts back up again. It's not like football where it's always going on for 90 minutes, you know, and then there's one halftime in the middle and then again it goes on. Or even like maybe you could say the same thing for any other sport. I wouldn't say that for tennis, but there are very few sports where, you know, it's like, you know, it's there for only 30, 40, 50 minutes, 1 hour, and it goes on quickly. And it gets done. But cricket is not like that. Just like how baseball isn't like that. Even NBA, even basketball is not like that. So that kind of you know, makes it boring if there are no fans there.
Yes, so makes sense.
Feel like that's what this year's IPL, I feel like, wasn't as exciting as the last year's.
Yeah, but statistically, this year was supposed to be. This year, I think this year's IPL was supposedly one of the best IPL in terms of stats and figures and numbers and all that stuff.
Of course, everyone's at home, right?
Yeah, because of the astronomical rise in viewership and all of that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's been going on with every single sporting events, social media platforms. You know, it's increasing drastically in this pandemic.
Yeah.
Yes. So with that, let's move on to football. And there were some good games this weekend. Especially some good games. I mean, first of all, let's talk about the big game that was in the week, and that was City versus Liverpool.
Yeah.
Did you watch it?
I did watch it, and I found the first half very entertaining. The second half, I found it very boring.
Yeah, all in all, the game was like not that, like, it did live up to the hype that it was supposed to be.
Because, see, if you historically, if you look at big name games, right, mouth-watering clashes like the City Derby, the Manchester Derby, or the United Liverpool matches and United Chelsea games, whatever it is, right? Yeah. All any top six teams battling it out with each other. Mm-hmm. Those games, I don't know, like, this is my perception, have turned out to be boring.
Yeah,
I don't know why. It's maybe because both of the teams adopting a similar strategy, trying to see out goals. Mm-hmm. Trying to keep goals and trying to defend as much as possible. Okay, like you take the example this season itself. Aside, except the Merseyside derby, which was between Everton and Liverpool, all the other big name games was a dud.
Don't forget United, Tottenham versus Arsenal. United.
Yeah. Oh man. That was a one-sided game. You need that. Nobody expects that in a mouth-watering clash or a big name game.
Yeah.
So that was a one-sided affair. Mm-hmm. You look at Man United Chelsea. It was such a stalemate. It was a boring stalemate.
Yeah.
Man United Arsenal was a boring game. What else? There were other games, right? Other games.
Arsenal and Liverpool. That was like a good game.
That was a 3-1 victory.
Yeah, but still kind of not as good as everyone expected it to be.
It wasn't as exciting.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, what was I going to say? Yeah, but historically, City versus Liverpool have always been a blockbuster.
Yeah.
Like, you look at the past games and all, it's always a high-scoring game. Mm-hmm. There's so much action involved. There's so much drama involved.
Yeah.
You know, and all of that is there. So, automatically, you expected this game also would be on the same line.
Mm-hmm.
But this game, first half, you saw that glimpses, because City was constantly attacking. Liverpool also were constantly on the edge. So, there was that high-intensity action going on in that first half. But second half, though, the intensity completely dropped off.
Exactly.
I think both teams adopted a very defensive strategy and they were not just attacking at all.
Exactly.
So,
And
they could have easily had more goals.
Yeah.
But none of that happened.
Yeah. And I would say that going into this match, Liverpool didn't have Van Dijk. And the main thing in their mind was to not concede goals, because they knew that City coming into this match, they had some momentum going. So they could score some goals. And City, they just want to get back to how they play, how good they are, just going and destroying every other team that comes up against them.
They can do that because in the first half, they had that potential.
Yeah. So actually that's what we saw, right? In the first half, both teams went about it to see how many goals they can get. And then in the second half, they got to know, this is the quality of the team, right? That we have right now. City are not so solid in the back. But at the same time, they're very good going forward. Same thing with Liverpool as well. So I felt like both team and even both the coaches decided to just sit back and make sure they defend the deficit that they were in, both of them, and just try to get a point, and then just move on to the next games.
I know. Yeah. Hey, it's also got to do with the fact. I think it's also got to do with the fact that it is just 2020, man. 2020 being 2020.
Yeah.
All the things you expected it to happen never happened.
Exactly.
I mean, it is clearly 2020 when De Bruyne of all people missed the penalty.
Yeah.
Who would have thought?
Oh my God.
Who would have imagined KDB of all people would have missed the penalty?
The keeper. He didn't even hit the keeper.
Yeah.
That was
It wasn't a shot on target. It was outside.
Exactly.
Who's one of the best midfielders in the world. I think probably the best midfielder in the world at the moment.
Yeah.
Who's so good with shots. You name it. You name a quality, he's good at that.
Yeah.
Right? Him missing a sitter of a penalty was just absolutely shocking. It could have been easily City's game if they had that penalty converted.
Yeah. I mean, there were so many weird moments. Like, Jesus scored for City, he came back from an injury, I think.
Oh, that was a beautiful goal.
That was a really good goal. Really good goal. And Salah got a
again.
It was
this guy's assist, KDB's assist.
Yeah, exactly. So there were moments where both teams looked like they could get a gain in edge against each other. But again, in the second half, both of them tried to play it safe, not trying to concede a goal. And it was kind of a letdown, considering
like
the hype.
That, that attitude of theirs when they go full guns blazing and they play that fearless brand of football that was missing from both the teams in the second
half.
So it was by the way, Trent is injured and so is Joe Gomez. Yes. So I don't know what the fuck is Liverpool going to do this the rest of the season.
They are so screwed.
Their only centre-back is Joel Matip.
Yeah.
And that new kid, whoever played, what's his name? Some Williams guy.
Yeah, I forgot. Yeah. And they don't even have a backup centre-back too. Like, of course, that's it.
I think they have a few kids on the block.
Yeah.
Because I think who did they play? They played Sheffield before this game.
Yeah.
And they I think they employed a new kid.
His name is Nathaniel
from the academy.
Nathaniel Phillips.
Yeah, that's the guy.
Yeah.
Nathaniel Phillips.
But still,
he was pretty good. He was pretty good at that game.
You can't expect a young kid to go out and play the season. Yeah. Correct. And also, they don't know what's the extent of Joe Gomez's injuries because he just went into surgery. And we'll get to know about how serious his injury is.
I don't know how long is Trent out for as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, Liverpool this season, I mean, that's why they're going to go looking out for a defender in the January transfer window. Like, basically, a lot of outlets are saying that they're possibly going for Upamecano.
Yeah. I think they might end up signing him.
Because if we are targeting anyone and if there are any other clubs looking at the same target, we are never going to get that target. That's just how it is with United.
Not at least with the management and the manager we have.
Exactly. Like, that's for sure. History has shown us, we can never trust United whenever it goes after a target. So. So, speaking of United, the 3-1 victory that we got from Everton.
You saw the game?
I didn't see the game, but later on I came back home and I saw the entire game. So
what a beautiful game, no? Oh, I'm so happy we played so well.
But the game actually felt like the same kind of gameplay that we did when Bruno came into the club, where Bruno was the one who was the catalyst and everyone were just running around and trying to
play
the opposite team. There was no proper tactics in the team. No one had you have to go here, you have to run here. Like, how Klopp and Pep set or even Bielsa set their teams up. Again, there was nothing like that. It was just that Bruno was the catalyst for, pulling the strings everywhere on the pitch. And he got us the win. Other than that,
it was all Bruno.
Yeah, exactly.
He was everywhere on the pitch.
Yeah, exactly.
That man was just, he was just doing a Kante where he covered the entire ground.
Yeah,
he was when you get a hunch that this might be an attacking proposition and this might result in a chance. Bruno is involved in that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how the game went by, and kudos to Bruno, man.
And also you have to think about the fact that Everton came into this match where they lost their last two or three matches.
They played really well in the first half.
And also, they didn't have their proper full strength team where they were winning in the beginning of the season. They didn't have Richarlison, who you have to say, even though he sometimes missed shots and doesn't pass the ball, he puts in that work rate into the team. He runs up and down the pitch.
Last season, he was easily their best player.
Yeah, exactly.
He was their best player.
And clearly, they missed him. And if Richarlison was in the team, maybe you never know. Maybe we couldn't have gotten the win. Maybe Everton could have won the match.
No, I'm not sure, but I think we did play well because they had James, they had Luka Dean back, they had Sigurdsson as well. They had decent players. They had Calvert-Lewin, all of these players they had.
And
even Bernard was damn good, who scored the goal, first goal for them.
So
they had a pretty good team.
Such a stupid goal. Dude.
Yeah, that was a poor goal.
Yeah, that was a poor goal. Oh my God. When I saw that,
it was a good shot, but we could have prevented that.
When I got a notification saying that the Everton scored a goal, I was like, oh, okay, now all is gone for sure, all is done. But then again, dude, we have spoken about this, right?
I think we can't help but mention it every episode.
Yeah, exactly. The moment he gets sacked, he was about to get sacked. He gets a win. It's ridiculous.
But I think he's going to see the end of his career at United.
Yeah.
Mostly by the end of this year, he might see his way out.
Yeah, for sure. And speaking of United, we'll get to, I have some news about United and some transfers going on, but we'll talk
we'll
about
we'll cover that. the other games.
Yeah, exactly. And also, like, one thing that I have to mention, like, Cavani got his debut goal, right?
Oh, that was a wonderful goal. Yeah, I mean, yeah, yeah. Bruno his could have easily goal, yeah. gone for that goal.
Yeah.
To get his hat-trick, but yeah. it was so unselfish of him to assist.
That shows he's Cavani. A proper leader. Proper leader, you know, that's
and a team player, exactly. And a proper team player,
exactly. And it was a beautiful finish by Cavani, like a poacher's
Cavani,
finish.
Yeah, happy for him. Finish. Although yeah. I'm not a big fan of him. I mean, yeah. I'm not at all a fan of him. Yeah. But still happy for him.
Yeah, I'm okay with him. He brings in that experience. Maybe he could help the young forwards right now that we have because there are so many controversies going around. You know, with Mason Greenwood. You know, news coming in saying that you know in training he was being very lazy and all, and Bruno actually gave him a proper. Proper yelling at him, and there was some scuffle going on between
that,
both of them.
That might, I don't know, that might put Bruno on the heat map for like amongst players.
I mean,
I know that he's trying to, you know, sort of bring the team together and trying to be that leader figure in the dressing room and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think too much of all of that will put you in hot waters with the player and players. And, you know, the player, like when I know that you want to be respected amongst the player and you want to establish your footprint amongst the, in the dressing room. Mm-hmm. But I think too much of all of that will sort of, you know, make you just a bully amongst the player, amongst
but
amongst
also this shows teammate. This kind of shows the, like the, how the management is so weak. Like, you know, this shouldn't be coming from a player like in the team. Especially if he's not the captain.
If it was Sir Alex Ferguson, he would have stepped him and slapped his face, saying that no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
But I don't think nobody is doing it for him. So, and only because of that, he is stepping him and taking the initiative.
Exactly.
But I think he needs to, you know, get his foot off the gas and calm down a little bit and not just be upset about everything. Mm-hmm. Because even when you see him play, right. He's just upset even if there is one mispass. Like, you can't be like that.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you can because there is nobody in the team who does that, but not all the time. That doesn't work all the time because that will only make you look like a, you know, taskmaster in the eyes of your other teammates.
There could be so many reasons. There could be a reason where because, you know, the management isn't strong enough. They are not like properly disciplining the players around them and the players are just too lax. You know, they're just like, you know, we'll do what we want to. You know, stuff like that. But again, anyways, we'll come back to some of the news that with United. But there are some two games that I want to talk about. And that is Arsenal losing to Aston Villa 3-0, dude.
Oh, man. Did you see the game? I saw the second half. I didn't watch the first half. I saw the second half. Dude, I mean, it's okay if we don't sign anyone. Just sign Jack Grealish, dude.
How good is that guy? I'm telling you, right? I told you like when we before the transfer window ended. He's really good, dude. He's that one English player who is not hyped properly for what he does.
That's true. That I agree with. Yeah. Because it's surprising because exactly the same time last year, I was at a different opinion.
Yeah.
I completely was thinking that, you know, the hype around him is just overrated and he is definitely overrated.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does look pleasing to the eye. He did look pleasing to the eye last time, but he lost the ball lots of time and all that stuff. But this season, he's just completely turned it around, man. Every time he has the ball on his feet, it looks like he's going to create a chance out of it.
And I feel like one of the main reasons for that is because he has better players around him right in this season. So he can actually, you know, play at his finest.
No, I think the team is built around him.
He is the crux of the team
because every time there is an Aston Villa goal, I mean, a lot of people say this and I'm just reiterating that point. Every time there is an Aston Villa goal, even if you're not following the game, if for example FPL players, every time he's a very good FPL asset as well, every time there is an Aston Villa goal and you see your live score, you expect Grealish's name to be there, his name to be there in some form of involvement. It can be a goal or an assist. You know that, you know, Grealish is involved in that goal. That's how important he is to the team. Every time he has the ball, and the way he dribbles, the way he passes, it's just so easy on the eye. Yeah. He makes it look so easy. He's like this lazy dude, you know, who courses through the team. He dribbles so beautifully on the eye. It's so nice to watch him play.
And also the way he plays kind of resembles how Aubameyang plays for Arsenal. You know, he starts off on the left and you never know whether he'll continue down the left or whether he'll come into the middle. So it's very difficult. And also he's so good at dribbling as well. So you can't even put like carelessly put to, try to tackle him because he might consider foul.
In EPL, I think in the last two seasons, he's the most fouled guy.
Yeah. And also one of the the most dribbles in the league as well.
Yeah.
Compared to every other player. I think the only player who is close to him is Traore, I think, from Wolves.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but again, it was so surprising for me to watch. Like, we lost against Arsenal so badly, and then Aston Villa just came in and...
the logic for that is it's 2020, and this Premier League season has been, I think, the most unpredictable season in the last 10 years at least.
But I have to say, Aston Villa do look really good, really good. Because, like, players that they have, McGinn, Barkley, they're just dictating that midfield. Ollie Watkins, too, they signed a really good championship player. Into their team, and it's really properly showing. Like he's actually putting in a lot of goals for them, so it's good to see. Right. Yeah, and also I think Partey got injured in this match as well, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think so. Yeah, Partey got injured in this match as well. I think so.
Okay, I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah,
dude, and I don't know what Arsenal's plan is. Sometimes I just don't understand what Arteta is planning to do. I know that he has a system in place and he has tactics.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it is him or the players. They are just not able to execute it.
Mm.
Right? And Oba, dude, barring that goal from a penalty he scored against United, he's gone five or six games goalless.
Yeah.
That has never happened to Oba in the last 5 years. I mean, the last time he went 5 or 6 games goalless was in 2014 when he was playing for Dortmund.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
This just goes on to show like what a shitty tactic you are at least employing with respect to Aubameyang.
You
have to play him as a central striker in place of Lacazette.
Exactly.
Right,
exactly.
And maybe switch Lacazette on the left side.
Yeah.
Because Aubameyang is ruthless in front of goal. He is not a player who's supposed to be playing as a winger.
Yeah.
And his stats reflect that. His stats say that he's completely transitioned into a winger.
Mm. Yeah.
If you look at the expected goals chart, right? He is 40th or 41st.
Yeah, which is bizarre.
That's an insane stat. That's a horrible stat for somebody of the caliber of Aubameyang.
Exactly. Exactly. Like
I just hope he, Arteta thinks over his position at least, because I really like Aubameyang.
Yeah, because Arsenal, if you look at it this season, they have been good at the back, but at the same time, they have been so poor when it comes to going forward. And one of the reason is because Aubameyang is not firing in full cylinder, and he's kind of been handicapped because of the tactics that Arteta is using in the team. So it's kind of sad to see Aubameyang not play.
But it's only this season.
Yeah.
Right? He's been, so I think this is his third or fourth season.
Yeah.
All his previous seasons, he's been brilliant for Arsenal.
Mm.
He's been their best player easily. Yeah. Only this season, I don't know. So it's clearly the tactics, changing tactics.
Exactly. And Lacazette is sometimes so wasteful when it comes to playing down the middle. Like sometimes he gets some really good chances, but he doesn't score the goals.
Yes.
It's so frustrating to see when you're Arsenal.
But he plays an important role to the Arsenal system.
Yeah, true.
Because he drops back a lot deeper and he links up play. Mm. He sort of shields those lines between defense and the midfield.
Yeah.
So attack and midfield,
Mm-hmm.
And he does all of that link up play. But when you're a striker, when that is your natural role, you're expected to convert and score goals.
Exactly.
Which he's not doing.
Yeah, true.
Anyway,
yeah.
Aston Villa looks good defensively.
Yeah, for
this,
sure.
This game was, they were pretty good defensively. Last game against Southampton, they conceded 4 goals, yes, but those 4 goals were world-class goals.
Yeah,
two of them were free kicks. One of them was a worldie by Danny Ings, which you can't do anything about. So they are pretty good defensively. So FPL players, FPL managers might want to invest in Aston Villa defenders.
Yeah, true.
And their goalkeeper is a world-class goalkeeper, dude. Emi Martinez. I don't understand why Arsenal let him go.
I mean, they had Bird Leonard too. I mean, he's a pretty good goalkeeper as well. So you can't...
Dude, but Emi Martinez easily is one of the best goalkeeper in the Premier League.
Yeah, but it's like the same situation that you have with United. You know, we have De Gea and Henderson.
Yeah, correct.
Which is...
Correct.
It's kind of unfair for the other player as well. Like you making him sit, bench him, and not giving game time, So I feel like, it's good that he went to Aston Villa. And they're actually playing pretty well as well.
Yep.
So with that we'll finish up with the last game that I want to talk about, and that is Crystal Palace versus Leeds, where Leeds lost 4-1.
Oh man!
4-1.
Again, I have mentioned this in, I think, in the last couple of episodes as well.
Yeah.
Leads are just so unpredictable to draw a conclusion, like to pin a conclusion on them.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're damn good defensively. Sometimes they are just ridiculous defensively. And I don't understand.
Yeah.
I don't understand what is their tactics now.
Yeah.
It's just not showing. But I'm sure Bielsa will come back.
And I feel like you kind of see like the slowly the fatigue and the pressure of the season, you know, kind of
creeping ball in. Tactics.
Kind of creeping in into Leeds. Especially with COVID going on right now, it's kind of difficult for players to be in the top physical shape. And
their most important player also is out, right? Callum Phillips is out.
Exactly.
So that fulcrum in the midfield is not there.
Yeah. True.
Sort of break all the attacks. He is the main guy for that.
Yeah. True. Very true. So that's why. So you kind of see a little bit. And also, I think even Click is injured out as well.
Yeah. He played the last game.
Is Click out as well? No. Click is playing. Okay. I think I might be thinking about someone else. So, yeah. But again, like, you know, you kind of see slowly, you know, the wheels falling off, just like how what happened in the championship as well. You know, it's the latter part of the season or in the middle of the season where you truly see whether Leeds can properly pull through and, you know, get something for the rest of the season. But again, like Crystal Palace played really well.
Yeah, and Leeds, right? If Bielsa doesn't stay, they are definitely getting relegated.
They're gone. That's
if
it. They're gone.
Bielsa leaves
sure.
the team.
Yeah.
If Bielsa leaves the team, Leeds are pretty much any other championship team.
Yeah, because when you think about it, they without Bielsa, when you look at the team, they are actually not Premier League team when you look about it. Like maybe like the top, about the bottom half.
I agree.
The team. Yeah.
I agree with you because.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, maybe the bottom half of the team, but other than that, I mean, if it's any other manager, I don't think any other manager could bring them to where Leeds right now are in the Premier League.
100%. Yeah. Because the season where Bielsa joined, the season before that, Leeds finished 14th or 15th in the championship.
Yeah.
Despite being such a high-profile club, right? They were struggling so bad.
Exactly.
And the moment Bielsa took over the reins. They actually, look like they are going to win the championship. They for the first 6 or 8 months, they were top of the league. Then they slipped further to third place and they had to play the, you know, playoffs and all that stuff.
Exactly.
And the second season, they went on to win the league, right?
Yeah.
That's clearly Bielsa's impact.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
Yeah.
Obviously, credit has to go to players, but it's mostly Bielsa's genius that has seen Leeds break that barrier and come back into Premier League.
And
so if Bielsa doesn't stay with them, they are screwed.
Yeah, and I feel like for Leeds to properly challenge, like maybe like Leicester to challenge for the top six teams, I still feel like they still need investments into the team because some of the players some positions are not good enough. Yeah.
That they'll do. I'm sure they'll do because they have a very good owner, right?
Yeah, exactly. Who's passionate about the club as well. So that's good.
Very passionate about
them. When I see that, so I feel so bad. I'm like, why? Why can't my club have that?
Yes.
Yeah. So moving on with that, I have some news regarding some of the clubs and some of the players. So right now, we actually spoke about this in the last podcast. We are actually monitoring Pochettino right now.
Yeah, this I know. Pochettino and Nagelsmann both.
Nagelsmann, yeah.
We are very interested. I read somewhere that our the United management really likes Nagelsmann's style and they are planning to get him if Pochettino doesn't work out.
Exactly. And Pochettino is being monitored by Man City, PSG and another club as well. I don't know.
Real Madrid.
Yeah, exactly. So like the chances of getting Pochettino, if Guardiola doesn't get a contract and Tuchel doesn't get a contract, then I don't think we are going to get Pochettino for sure. But other than that, I would say like the board still has a lot of trust in Ole, it seems. And they feel like he's still the guy for being the manager of United. But again, like, you know, the way he's playing right now, the inconsistencies on the pitch and at the same time, offside, off-pitch controversies, like this is not the kind of manager that, United should have. Because we're not even going forward or backward. We're just in the middle. So it's kind of...
But I don't know, man. I think it's that Man United bias that I will still kind of feel bad if he gets sacked because I don't know, that sentiment is there, right?
Yeah, this is that, that's why this is why I believe one of the main reason this is why I believe that, you know, why club legends or players who have played for the club should not be given the manager role.
It should not happen at all, man. Because just imagine somebody like Scholes coming back to manage the team, and you have a horrendous run under him. Oh my God, I can't even imagine. Don't even want to imagine.
Exactly. So that's why, like, you know, just stay out of the club. You know, let's get to some other managers or some other players. Maybe you can go to other clubs, not your own clubs. But don't become the manager of your own club. Yeah, because, if you don't play well...
And that too, without any experience, man.
Yeah.
Like, any significant, reasonable experience.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Your CV is blank. Yeah. And suddenly you're, you're given the best project.
Yeah, that's what. That's
to execute all your skills.
Yeah, that's what's going with the United and with Chelsea as well, right? They have the same problem
with Lamps,
too.
With Lamps and with this guy also, Ollie. And even Ryan Giggs, before he became the manager of Wales.
Yeah.
He wanted to be United's main manager. And United board was like, "Fuck off! We are not giving you."
But then we gave it to Ollie. When you look at his CV, it's pathetic compared to manage one of the biggest club in the world. His CV is pathetic. Like, you could give the role to someone like Nuno or maybe even the Aston Villa manager. I mean, compared to Ole, when you look at just by CV itself. So it's like, that's why don't employ a club legend or a club player. Because
if you look at Juventus for now, even they are not doing pretty well under Polo.
Yeah.
Like, they are inconsistent, just like how United
and
is.
Even
they are winning
Zidane,
games, they are losing
Zidane
games.
With Real Madrid as well.
But Zidane's won them 3 Champions League. So
but that's because of the team. I really believe it's because of the team. I don't believe it's because
that
of
is
Zidane.
There. But still, on paper, he was still the manager.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So obviously,
true.
People who don't understand football will credit him only.
Yeah, exactly. That's what a lot of people say about Pep when he was in Barcelona as well, right? Like, he had the best team in the world.
I still believe it's Pep.
Now we know it's Pep. But the thing about Pep is, if you don't give him the proper resources, he's not going to perform.
He'll only manage that top 2 teams.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. He can't do a Bielsa.
Yeah.
He'll never do a Bielsa, even if he can.
Yeah, he can't be a Bielsa. He can't be a Alex Ferguson. He can't be a Jurgen Klopp. He's his own kind of thing. Like, where he needs to have the proper resources, he needs to have the right players, and he needs, like, the proper backing from the board, then he can do his own thing. But other than that... If there is one
but an absolute genius, but
yeah,
an
true,
absolute
true.
Mental
yeah,
coach.
Yeah, 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 true, true.
No
yeah,
denying that.
Yeah, there's no denying that. But every conditions around him has to be perfect for him to perform.
Yeah.
If not,
right. I mean, that's exactly what he is. He's a perfectionist. He is so obsessed about the games. He's almost like it's there's a reason why he is such an ardent follower of Bielsa. He obsesses things about football in his mind.
Yeah. So there is one
what
thing
other
that
news
I,
do you have?
There is one thing that I want to talk about Seven, and that is Ronaldo is actually being tempted by United.
Yes. Yeah. I read this.
What do you think about it?
I read about it. I think he could be a Zlatan 2.0. Right? Because I still feel that there is still some years left in him.
Yeah, because he's
so
still
I think now is the time.
In Syria, right?
Yeah, he's still playing at the top of his powers.
Yeah.
At the peak of his powers.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if the move happens next season.
Mm-hmm.
And why wouldn't he want to come back? Every single soul and Manchester loves him.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want to have him back?
Exactly.
But again, I don't know how it'll pan out with Cavani now, leading the front line.
Yeah.
There are superb young players which we have in the front.
With Cavani, it's a short-term signing. Even the board knows it. That's why we are actually after really hard for Haaland, right? We are ramping up the move. Like, we have actually kind of forgotten about Sancho, and now we are properly going after Haaland. Like, everywhere you see, it's all Haaland, United.
Exactly. And this also seems like a very carefully curated business decision.
Yeah.
Right? So, you have these years of fuck-up.
Yeah.
Okay. Where you've clearly upset fans. There you've converted a lot of fans into now non-fans and enemies of the club.
Yeah.
Who troll the club and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You bring in Ronaldo, you completely eliminate this problem.
Oh yeah, for sure. All those fans.
Right. No, everyone is going to forget. everybody is going to forget about whatever problems, whatever existing problems we have.
Exactly.
And people will, I won't be surprised if people will start rooting back for the Glazers.
Yeah, true. Very true. Yeah.
So,
correct.
Seems like, I mean, United will still make a lot of money. Only through the short sales of Ronaldo.
Social media, all that shit is going to be up for them.
Oh, Man United social media is already one horrible thing. It'll go even crazy once Ronaldo comes back.
Yeah, true. Very true.
I can already imagine the kind of marketing campaigns that they'll do.
Oh my God. And fans are mostly going to forget about all the fuck up that leads us to.
Everything.
They'll forget about all the miseries. Yeah, especially the fans who have not like properly watched this Alex Ferguson, like what he did. And like the recent fans. They're going to forget about, you know, what's going on with the Glazers, and they're going to be all in with United and, you know, with Ronaldo and all stuff like that. So it's like a proper, like a propaganda kind of move by Glazers, you know, distracting the masses. So it's going to be fun to watch if it's going to happen, because in every transfer window since he has left, there have been rumors that he's going to come back. But now you never know, because in Juventus, I don't feel like he's being like properly, you could say, championed by Serie A or even by the team as well. And I feel like with Pirlo, I don't think like there has been some conflict going on between him and Pirlo as well, where there are reports that Pirlo kind of doesn't like the attitude that Ronaldo brings into the team. And
it's pretty much everywhere Ronaldo goes.
Exactly.
Not about the attitude. Ronaldo goes and inherits that team.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who the manager is, who the owner is.
Yeah.
Ronaldo is the boss.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Ronaldo is the manager who plays in the Juve uniform. That's all.
Yeah,
in the Juve jersey.
Yeah.
That's all. And if Ole is going to still manage at that time, if Ronaldo makes it back to United, do you think he will listen to Ole?
Exactly.
I don't think so.
Yeah, that's why
he will manage the team. He will manage the team on the field. You go there, and he'll play along also. That's how it is going to be.
And just to finish off, Stepan, I want to ask you this question: if Ole gets sacked, okay, who do you want the manager of United to be?
Poch.
Not Nagelsmann,
because of the only factor that Poch has certified Premier League experience.
Okay. Because when you think about Poch, he doesn't play the United way, where we have traditionally been recognized for having wingers and then, you know, going forward. Poch doesn't like to play like that. But Nagelsmann
does. Poch did play some fantastic attacking football that led Tottenham to the finals of Champions League, right? Mm-hmm. It's only towards the fag end of his Tottenham stint that he screwed up.
Yeah.
Which I think happens to every manager at least in one or two seasons.
True.
So I think I can forfeit that side of the, I can discount that factor.
Uh-huh.
And I would still want to see Poch. And Poch is a brilliant tactician, dude. He's a pretty good manager.
And also when you said, you know, he actually bought Tottenham all the way into the Champions League final. And he made them so good in the Premier League. That reminded me of the fact that a lot of Ole apologists, you know, whenever anyone brings up the fact that, you know, Poch should become the manager, they always say that, oh, that guy hasn't won anything. But dude, like when you look at on this side, Ole hasn't done shit either. Like he is actually much worse down the ladder compared to someone like Pochettino. And yeah, that's weird. But I'm actually excited about Nagelsmann too, because when you look at it, his playstyle is more attacking, more pressing, more like Jürgen Klopp. But a little bit more tweak.
But again, see, I'll give you my theory on that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You can manage someone like Hoffenheim because nobody cares about that team, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody. It is not a very big club. He brought that club from obscurity to some level of fame and name and fame.
Yeah.
Okay? And he managed Leipzig. Leipzig is relatively a newer team, so not many people knew about it, right? But when you're coming to United, when you're inheriting a team United, you are inheriting a team full of superstars with full of massive ego, right? And you are a manager who's only 33 years old. Cavani, Mata, players who are still playing on the field are much older than you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they will curb their ego and they will listen to you?
That is actually one of the main reasons why I actually am excited to come in. Because when you look at his, the rise to being the manager of Leipzig, every single person who has met him tell that he's one of the most charismatic people that they have ever met.
Mm.
Like the way he talks to them, the way he makes them understand, even the players. Like that is one of the main reasons why he got the role of, you know, being the Leipzig manager for such an engage. Because even in the youth setup, the way he communicated with the players, even though they had egos, doesn't even matter. He, like, when he enters the room, there's a, like an aura that comes into the that room as well. And I mean, even the players feel it, even anyone in the room feels it. And when it comes to, like, obviously, Poch has a lot of technical astute when it comes to, when it comes to playing the game. But when it comes to Nagelsmann, of course, tactically, he's pretty good as well. He has his own type of football, which is kind of similar to the early days that Klopp played when he was in Dortmund. Like, he was completely rushing the other team and trying to score a goal. That's what kind of like how Nagelsmann plays. But at the same time, he has this personality that every single person talks about. I think I came across this on Tifo Football, where they were talking about how the rise of Nagelsmann was when he was in his youth setup. I mean, coaching wise, when he was in youth setup, and then when he how he became the Leipzig manager in such a young age, and the way that they described like how his man management is like one of the best. The way that he manages people, like not just the coaching staff, but also like from the owners all the way to down to the players, and also like the groundsmen and the cleaning. I mean, your lunch lady, you know, all those people. He's like one of the most charismatic managers right now in Europe. So I feel like if he comes to United, maybe he could be the ideal man to, you know, properly manage the Glazers and also the players at the same time.
Could be possible. But I still highly suspect that because of the sheer scale United operates at, right? Mm. It's full of superstars. It's full of egoistical, maniacal minds who control the helm of affairs and all of this stuff. So I'm not sure if, you know, Nagelsmann can work out of that way by just charming, by just being charming and all that. Could be possible.
Yeah.
But again, I still feel he's too young to manage a side like United. But hey, I never want to rule that possibility out. I would love to see Nagelsmann at United, but not at the expense of Poch, who has certified experience in Premier League. He's managed Southampton, and he's done really well at Southampton. And then that's why he got the job at Tottenham. And Tottenham is on the map because of Pochettino, in my opinion. And Harry Kane. And otherwise, also, nobody would have known I don't think Tottenham would have been so famous.
Yeah, and also one of the main reasons why I would want Nagelsmann in as the United manager would be because if he comes to United, United will have the most, the most stylish manager ever in the game of football.
And probably the youngest team in the Premier League.
Yeah, exactly.
He is also known to promote a lot of youngsters in his squads.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we can get rid of all
I'm just excited of the outfits that he's going to wear in every matches, especially the one he's in the Champions League.
He's so cool. Yo, what a well-dressed man he is.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. It is so fun to watch him dress. Yeah, all the outfits.
But in my opinion, nobody is as well-dressed as Pep.
Oh,
Pep is like a fashion icon for me. He is so minimalist, but so elegant and classy in his dressing.
I would actually put Nagelsmann above. Like, he tries so many different things.
Oh,
like
I love Pep.
Zebra pattern that he wore in the Champions League against us. You know, he's like the Milan.
Ranveer Singh. He's like the Ranveer Singh of the football.
He's like the Milan runway model of the footballing world. You know, tries different shit and all that. So, yeah.
Or you could just tell he's the Ranveer Singh of footballing managers.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Actually, yeah, it would be very nice to watch, to see him come down the touchline, you know, wearing his bizarre sometimes.
Mind
or
you,
sometimes
it's also a strategy.
Outfit. Yeah.
It's also a strategy to distract the opposition.
Exactly, exactly.
Like, hey, who's that guy, man? He looks like a zebra.
Exactly.
And then the ball is dispossessed.
Yeah.
And then you're dispossessed and you're
They would think that they're in a traffic signal or something like that. So they would stop dribbling forward and then we could take the ball and score. So yeah, like there are some tactics in there as well. So you never know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah. So, I think that's it. That's all we had to talk about. We'll be back next week. There are no games next week, right? I think they're still on an international break. Maybe we'll bring in some abstract topic to talk about. We'll think about it. And we'll see. Yeah, we'll have an episode for you guys in the next week. And that's it for this video.
Guys, we are available on Spotify. We are available on Google Podcasts and all the other podcast platforms.
Yeah.
Please do listen to us there. If you don't want to engage on the YouTube platform, you don't want to engage all your senses in consuming this video, you can just listen to it on one of the podcasting platforms.
Exactly. So with that,
give us a listen over there.
Yeah. So give us a listen. And also, if you're watching it on YouTube, subscribe, like, and share. And
all that jazz.
We will see you in the next one. See ya.